Hello and good evening from Yerushalayim Eretz Kodesh. Today we'll focus on the Gemara in Yom Daf Tes Amud Aleph, which talks about, unfortunately I don't have the Maror Komos printed up today, so we'll give you a little time to look them up. So we're focusing on the Gemara in Yom Daf Tes Amud Aleph, in which the Gemara talks about the Chorbanos of three Chorbanos: the Chorban of Bayis Rishon, the Chorban of Bayis Sheni, and the Chorban of Mishkan Shiloh. So we're going to talk a little about Mishkan Shiloh, which most people aren't fully aware of, and we'll talk about the Kohanim Gedolim, the first Beis HaMikdash and the second Beis HaMikdash, and maybe if we have time a nice word in explaining the Gemara at the end in Daf Tes Amud Beis. So what does the Gemara tell us? Amar Rav Baruch Hanan Rabbi Yochanan, Ma'i Dechsev, the Pasuk says, Yiras Hashem Tosef Yomim Ushnos Hashem Tiktan. Yes, Hashem, the fear of Hashem will add days, and the years of Hashem will shorten. Yes, Hashem, Tosef Yamin, Semigdash Rishon. It's talking about the first place of Migdash Shomer, Abam, Asvah, Sashonim. It's the first place of Migdash for 410 years, for Hashim Shabbat, Yud Ches Kohanim Gedolim. And all that served in the first place of Migdash are 18 Kohanim Gedolim. And here already is the gear, so how to be Gorish properly, 18 or less. We'll get to that in a minute. The grill over here is Gorish 12. And but the bottom line is that the Kohanim Gedolim served for a long period of time. And the years of Hashem will be shortened as the second Beis HaMikdash Shomer Abamas V'Esim Shomer. It stood for 420 years. And more than 300 Kohanim served in the second Beis HaMikdash. Mem Shana Shishim Shimon HaTzadik. If you take out 40 years that Shimon HaTzadik served, which Ushmanu Shishim Yochanan Kohen Gadol, and 80 years that Yochanan Kohen Gadol served, Ezra Shishim Shishmuel Ben Fabi, Bami Da'av Shishim Shavloz Ben Chasam. So you have another 40 and 80 is 120, and 10 years of Rabbi Shmuel Ben Fabi, that's 130, and Shavloz Ben Chasam, 140 years. Mikan Ve'ach Tzev Chashav Kolechad Ve'achad La'ot Shishnasa. So that tells us that the rest of the Kohanim, none of them actually lived for a year. None of them lived out a year. That's what the Gemara says. So now the first Beis HaMikdash had Kohanim Gedolim served for a long time, and the second Beis HaMikdash, the Kohanim Gedolim died out. We'll soon discuss how and when. How do we know that in the first Beis HaMikdash all they had was 18 Kohanim Gedolim? So the source is actually in Divrei HaYamim, Aleph, Perek Hei, where it lists from Sukkim Choftes and on until Perek Vav. So listen, May Amman Ramosha and Elazar Elaz Pinchas, Pinchas Elaz Avishua, Avishua Elaz Buki, a whole list, and then it has Yochanan Holodes Azariah, who Hashakim Babayez Hashabon Hashlomo, and Yochanan gave birth to Azariah. Azariah is the Kohen who served in the Beis HaMikdash of Shlomo Yerushalayim, and Azariah gave birth. Then we go down the list, so we have Azariah, Amaria, Achitub, Tzadok, Shalom, Chilkiah, Azariah, Sroya, and Yehud Tzadok, and Yehud Tzadok Alach Baglos Hashem as Yehud of Yerushalayim B'mein Nebuchadnezzar. So all that totals up is to 9 Kohanim Gedolim. Seemingly, the Pasuk is telling us that there are only 9 Kohanim Gedolim, while the Gemara here tells us there were more. So Rashi in Divrei HaYamim, or the Mefarsh in Divrei HaYamim, explains that when it says Hu Azariah Hashakim B'bayis HaShabon HaShlomo B'Yerushalayim, it doesn't mean that he is the first Kohen who served in the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. Azariah was a Kohen in the time of Uzziyahu. And Uzziyahu, who was king, went to be Maktik Torah in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And Azariah ran after him with 80 Kohanim to try to persuade him not to. And when Uzziyahu didn't listen, he was stricken with Tzaras, and they quickly took him out of there, and he remained in the Torah for the rest of his life. So the Pasuk mentions that Azariah is the one who was Machayim in the Beis HaMikdash of Shabbat Shlomo. It doesn't mean that he was the first one, but it mentions him specifically because he was Moshe Nefesh to go and tell the king not to be Maktik Torah, and that's why it specifies him. But really, if we talk about the first king who if we talk about the first king, it should be Tzadok. Tzadok Olidus Achimat, and Achimat Olidus Azariah, Azariah is Yochanan, Yochanan Olidus Azariah. So in other words, we add, we begin from Tzadok. Tzadok is actually the first Kohen who serves in the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. So let's go through a little of the history of the Kohuna Gedola, how it went. When Aaron HaKohen passed away, his son Elazar became Kohen Gadol. And after Elazar, his son Pinchas became Kohen Gadol. Pinchas lost the Kohuna Gedola from his family. Why did he lose the Kohuna Gedola? Because Pinchas did not go, there are a few things mentioned against Pinchas. He didn't go to be Matanet in the times of Yiftach. He could have saved Yiftach's daughter. But from then on, the Kohuna Gedola went to the family of Isamar. And from the family of Isamar, they served in Mishkan Shiloh until the days of Eli. In the days of Eli, Eli had two sons, Chofni and Pinchas, and Chofni and Pinchas did not serve Hashem properly, and then Shmuel gave him the whole klala, he told him the whole klala, and that the Kohen Gadol is transferred back from is transferred back from the family of Yisamar back to the family of Elazar. And in the Beis HaMikdash, Tzadok, Yavachimat and Tzadok, and Tzadok HaKohen is mentioned in the beginning of Sefer Melachim when it comes to appoint a new king, a replacement for David HaMelech. So there's a little quarrel, a little fight going on in the king's court. Shlomo HaMelech is the one actually who David HaMelech wants, but at the time Shlomo HaMelech is very young, all he is 12 years old. And Adoniah, he is the one who is a favorite by a certain, by a bunch of people. And the people who want Adoniah are those that don't want the son David HaMelech to take revenge on them, and one of them is Eliezer HaKohen, who knows that when the Beis HaMikdash is going to be built, he's not going to serve. And Tzadok is not invited because Tzadok is the one designated to actually serve in the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. So if we count from Tzadok, we have like this. We have Tzadok, Achimat, Azariah, Yochanan, Azariah, Amariah, Achituv, Tzadok, Shalom, Chilkiah, Azariah, and Shroya. And Shroya lives here at Tzadok. So in other words, we have 12, and that matches if we don't count Yer Tzadok as one of the Kohanim Gedolim, because it seems from the Pesukim in the end of Sefer Yirmi and the end of Sefer Melachim that Tzroya was actually the Kohen Gadol. In other words, Yer Tzadok was alive and went into Golus, but Tzroya was the Kohen Gadol in the time of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. I'll just quote for you in the end of Sefer Melachim. Ve'ikach rav tabachim, Melachim Beis, Perek Kof Hei, I'm reading Pasuk Yud-Ches. Ve'ikach rav tabachim, Esrayo Kohen Arosh, Vesfaneo Kohen Mishneh, the rav tabachim, the Zadon, the one who captured Yerushalayim, the Nebuchadnezzar never made it to Yerushalayim, the Zadon went, he took Esrayo Kohen Arosh, and he killed him. Ve'yolech Hasam HaMelech Bavel Rivlasa, he took Esrayo with a bunch of the people from the army to Melech Bavel and Ribla. Ve'yach Hasam HaMelech Bavel, Ve'yimisim B'Ribla Ve'eret Hamas, and Melech Bavel killed them. So Tzroya is not the one. Tzroya was the Kohen Gadol. But when the pasuk over here in Divrei Yomim says Yehotzadak Kolach Baglos Hashem Is Yudiv Yishalayim Biad Nebuchadnezzar, it means Yehotzadak was the one who went into Golos because his father was killed. But Yehotzadak did not serve in the Beis HaMikdash. So from Tzadok until Tzroya, we have 12, and that is indeed the girsa of the Gra that we're talking about, 12 Kohanim Gedolim. An interesting question which I saw raised in a sefer called Ezra's Kohen and Maseches Midos is that one Kohen is missing over here, and that is Yehoyada. Yehoyada was a Kohen Gadol in the days of Yehoash, and he was a Kohen Gadol who lived for 130 years. He restored the Malchus Beis David after Asaliah wiped out the whole family of Malchus Beis David except for Yehoash, who was hidden in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and Yehoyada went, and later on when Yehoash was reached the age of 7, we read this in the Haftorah of Parshas Shkolim, the end of the story, and he restored the Malchus, and he lived to 130 years, and when he passed away, they buried him actually in the Kavarim of Malchus Beis David, an exception to the rule. Normally you don't bury there except the kings, and they buried him also. And the question is, why is he not listed in this list over here of the Kohanim Gedolim? Okay, the Ezra Sparim tries to answer that maybe it's perhaps one of these Kohanim Gedolim had another name. Okay, I'm just, again, we're not going to solve everything, but that's an interesting question that's brought by the Ezra Squad. We go on to the second Beis HaMikdash. The Kohanim Gedolim in the second Beis HaMikdash. The second Beis HaMikdash stood for 420 years, and I don't really want to go in depth into the issue of the years, the way Chazal calculate versus the way the modern the science calculates the years of the second Beis HaMikdash and the Persian Empire. We've spoken about that numerous times. We'll speak a little about that today too. And according to Chazal, the whole the time period of the second Beis HaMikdash, which the Gemara says over here, 420 years, is divided up 34 years under the Persian Empire and 180 years under the Greek Empire, and then you have 103 years for the Hasmonaim and 103 years for Hardus, and that was the Romans' rule for 206 years total. According to scientific historians, the Persian Empire lasted a lot much longer than that, and the second Beis HaMikdash, according to their calculation, add on another 165 years. So if we're talking 420, another 165 years, we're talking about 585 years. That's even a larger figure is by Josephus, who lived at the time of the Churban Second Beis HaMikdash, and he gives the Second Beis HaMikdash over 600 years. Okay, Josephus' numbers require a lot of explanation. Sometimes you just two and two by him don't total four or something. So it's that's an extreme, but in essence, you sometimes see how he takes two numbers and puts them together and gets a third number, which is out of ballpark. But anyway, why is this important for us? Because we talk about the Kohanim Gedolim in the second Beis HaMikdash. So first of all, we have Yehoshua ben Yehotzadak, and that was in the Haftarah Parshas Va'alotcha. Those in Chutz La'aretz heard the Haftarah of yesterday, those in Haftarah a week ago. If we go into Zechariah, if we go, Vayarenis Yeshua Kohen HaGadol Omed Lefnei Malach Hashem Zechariah Gimel, Yeshua is the Kohen HaGadol, and he is the son of Yehotzadak, as mentioned in numerous places like for example the beginning of Chagai, Ve'el Yeshua ben Yehotzadak Kohen HaGadol, Yeshua is the son of Yehotzadak, and he's the Kohen HaGadol. So he's the Kohen HaGadol that appears at the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash. I shouldn't say the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash, I should say when the Jews first come back to Yerushalayim, because they don't build the Beis HaMikdash yet, and it'll be an 18-year process until the Beis HaMikdash is built. So we have Yeshua ben Yehotzadak, who's mentioned at the beginning. Later on, we have Pesukim in Sefer Nehemiah. And in Sefer Nehemiah, it says like this, Sefer Nehemiah, Perek Yud Beis, Pesukim Yud, Pesuk Yud, and Yud Aleph, a whole list. It mentions like this: Yeshua lives here, Yakim. Yakim lives here, Yashiv. Yashiv lives here, Yada. So we're talking about Yeshua, Yakim, Yashiv, Yada, Yonatan, and Yadua. We have six people over here. We have six Kohanim Gedolim that are listed over here. Now, according to the calculations of Chazal, we're talking about a 34-year period when the seventh Beis HaMikdash, and we divide 34 into six. We're talking about roughly 6 years of serving in the Kohuna Gedola. Now, 6 years is not all that much, and 6 years is not all that much. And those who want to prove that Chazal's calculation is not an accurate calculation, and I'm not going into the whole theological issue, could it be that Chazal were not Madaik in the years or not, because that's a whole discussion in itself. But there are those who say, look, if we have six Kohanim Gedolim over here, according to Chazal, these six Kohanim Gedolim are actually pushed into a period of 34 years, so we're talking about each Kohen Gadol served for like 5-6 years. Is that possible? Is that feasible that they serve for such a short time? What's interesting is that so one of the answers given is that it's not really 34 years, you have to add 54 years, and I have to realize that Yehoshua ben Yehotzadak, if Yehotzadak went into Golos, so Yehoshua was probably an older man at the time when he became Kohen Gadol, so we don't have to put him into the calculation, so we're left with 5, and put in the 50 years, so we get to about roughly 10 years Kohen Gadol. So that might be better. But on the other hand, what's interesting is Yehoshua's Kohanim, who totally is not referring to the historical question, he asked a question from the other side. If these Kohanim Gedolim served there for a longer time, how come they're not listed in our Gemara? If the shortest Kohen that's listed in our Gemara is a Kohen who served for 10 years, So now with the Kohen that gets mentioned of it, if he served for 10 years, he'd be mentioned in the Gemara. So it has to be that these are that served over here didn't even get to serve all that much. So maybe for 4 or 5 Kohanim Gedolim for 34 years, that's a lot, and not a little. So now we're just going from the opposite point, that the list of Kohanim over here is not enough, and it should be more. Because if they served for 10 years, then they should have gotten mentioned in the Gemara. Okay, that's an interesting thing. As I said, the Sefer is called Ezra's Kohanim and Midos. The Sefer's Midos, this Sefer is a wonderful Sefer. Used to be very hard to come by, but recently someone reprinted it in nice print and in 2 volumes. It's available. And basically any question that you'll ever ask of Masechus Midos can be found in the Sefer. It's a wonderful Sefer. So in the introduction, he has the Shaar Kohanim Gedolah, and there he also tries to reconstruct as much as possible how many Kohanim Gedolim do we know from this list of over 300. He gives over there about 20, 30, he goes through the whole thing in depth, everything he did, it's very much in detail. What's interesting is the last Kohen Gadol mentioned over here in Nehemiah is a Kohen Gadol by the name of Yadua, and obviously he was in the time of Nehemiah. Now Nehemiah was in the time of a person named Sanballat. Sanballat was the head of the Samaritans, a Horoni, and we know indeed that when Alexander the Great captured Eretz Yisrael, Sanballat was the leader of the Samaritans. And so mentions Josephus that he came and greeted Alexander the Great. So at first the historians had a big problem. How could, according to them, the story of Nehemiah took place 100 years before Alexander the Great? So how could Sanballat come and greet Alexander the Great? So at first they said, well, maybe Josephus was not accurate in his report. It could be. But unfortunately to them, in a cave in Shomron, in a place called Vadi Dlaya, where the Samaritans, we'll go through the story, when Alexander the Great captured Eretz Yisrael, he asked the Kohen Gadol by the name of Yadua, he asked him to support him. And since the Eretz Yisrael was under Persian rule, so Yadua refused to support him. The Shomronim, the Samaritans, supported him. And he came from the north. In other words, he came from Asia Minor. He comes all the way down the coast, and because the Samaritans supported him, and the Jews didn't, he gave the Samaritans permission to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. And this story can be found in the beginning of the seventh parak in Bullock of Gadol. It tells the whole story on Daf Samach Tes Amud Aleph that. There was a day that the Samaritans asked Alexander permission to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, and he granted it to them. Now the Gemara doesn't tell us why, but again we fill it in from other historical sources, and again because they supported the Greeks, Alexander the Great, while the Jews didn't. And when the Shimon HaTzadik saw this, he walked the whole night from Yerushalayim towards Antipatris, today a place called Afek, near Rosh Hashanah. And when Alexander the Great saw him, he dismounted from his horse and bowed down to him. And he told him, is it possible a mighty king like you bows down to this Jew? So he told him, his image is what's victorious for me in my wars. Let's not get into detailed explanations for that now. Anyway, so he said, what do you want? So he says, is it possible that the Beis HaMikdash, where they daven for your welfare, is it possible that you granted permission to destroy it? So he says, who is that? He says, that's the Samaritans. So he said to them, okay, you can go and do to the Samaritans what they wanted to do to you. And they went and they actually destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. Doesn't say this explicitly, but it seems that they raped the Har Gerizim, that was, they destroyed the temple that was on Har Gerizim. So we have the story over here with Alexander the Great, and on the way back, Alexander the Great captures Egypt, and from there he goes back north, and then he'll go ahead and eastward and defeat the Persian Empire and defeat the final king, who's known in history as Dariush or the Third. On the way back, the Samaritans revolted against Alexander the Great, and we can understand why, after he gave the Jews permission to destroy their Beis HaMikdash. So Alexander really punished them very hard and killed a lot of them, and many of them ran away. And they ran away eastward from Har Gerizim. They ran away towards the Jordan Valley, and they took refuge in caves near the Jordan Valley. And one of these caves, in a few of these caves in the Jordan Valley, remains were found in archaeological excavations from that time period, including documents from the Samaritans. One of them actually has a clay seal that says on it, Yehu ben Sanballat, Pachat Shomron. A seal from Yehu, the son of Sanballat, who is the satrap, the governor of Shomron. So this, back to our story, this caused a big problem for those who don't go with Chazal's calculations. Here it seems that Josephus knew what he's talking about when he said that Sanballat was around in the days of Alexander. We see he was. So how could, according to them, how Sanballat lived 100 years before that? So, problem. So, science has no problem with these things. We have Sanballat the second, and we have Sanballat, and if we need, we have Sanballat the third, and we have Yadua the second, and we have Yadua the third, and that's how all these problems are solved. And if we'll find another name of a king, he'll be the fourth. You know, well, it actually says what they do, because so in other words, if people think that like science has the absolute answer and their calculations and their dating is absolute, it's incorrect. There are a lot of problems, and this is one of them, the Sanballat story. So Yadua is a Kohen Gadol, and some suggest that this Yadua is none other than actually Shimon HaTzadik. In other words, it carries another name. Now we know Shimon HaTzadik, as we see from this Gemara, he was the Kohen Gadol at the beginning of the period of Alexander the Great. Because he comes out to greet Alexander the Great. So he ruled for 40 years. Was this the beginning of his Kohen Gadol or the end? Well, A, the fact, if it says Yadua, if Yadua is his father, so then it's obviously the beginning of the period. If Yadua is him, we don't know. But we take a little calculation. And when we go in Pirkei Avos, we have a very interesting thing. In Pirkei Avos, in the first parak, we have a list of from Ashik Mesa Gola, we go into Shimon HaTzadik, Antigonus Yisocho, and then we have five pairs, what are known as the Zugos. The Zugos are pairs who led Klal Yisrael at the time. One of them was a Nasi, and the other was an Avbesed. You have five pairs, and then you get to Hillel and Shammai. Now, when were Hillel and Shammai? The Gemara tells us in Shabbos that Hillel and Shammai were 100 years before the Churban. And the four Zugos, the four leaders from that time till the Churban. In other words, everyone lived for an average of 25 years. 25 years, reasonable. But if we take from the time of Alexander the Great, from when Shimon HaTzadik was, and we go, Shimon HaTzadik again was about, let's say, 40 years into the Beis HaMikdash, so you have another 380 years left for the Beis HaMikdash standing. Subtract the 100 years from Hillel and on, you're left for 280 years. 280 years and six Zugos, you're already getting to an astounding figure over here of 40, 50 years, each one ruling, which is a little of a problem. I'm not here to solve the problem, I'm just mentioning this issue, you know, how do we get this this time? The numbers over here are, you'd expect when a person becomes a leader on Klal Yisrael, he's not a youngster. He served his predecessor and whatever. So to be in power for 40, 50 years is a little... Okay, as I said, we have a little difficulty in understanding it. Again, we're not going to solve the problem over here. Ashik Mesek Dola themselves, this is also an issue. In other words, if you hold, like Chazal's calculation, then Ashik Mesek Dola, which were 120 people, they lived during one period. One time period. That period, the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash. If those who hold that the period lasted longer, so then Ashik Mesek Dola is not one time period, but it's a group of people over a set of years. In other words, that could have lasted over 100 years. So we have Shimon HaTzadik, and when Shimon HaTzadik, he ruled for 40 years. But from his children and on, that's where the trouble started. And the Gemara in Menachos, in the end of Menachos, tells us the story about Beis Chanya. The Gemara in Menachos, right at the end, this says on the Beis, I'm not going to go through the whole Gemara, but the Gemara talks about if a person makes an edit to be makriv, kuftes amalav and kuftes ambes. If a person makes an edit to be makriv, a covenant in the Beis HaMikdash, and instead he's makriv in Beis Chanyo, then lo yotzer. He's not yotzer. What is Beis Chanyo? So the Gemara goes to tell a story that when Shimon HaTzadik passed away, he had two sons. Shimi and Chanyel, and there was a whole fight between them who's going to be Kohen Gadol. Again, there are two different opinions. I'm not going into the whole thing. The bottom line is Chanyel was forced to flee, and he ran away to Mitzrayim, and in Mitzrayim he built a mikdash. In Mitzrayim he built a mikdash, Hashem Shemayim, and that's where he served. First of all, I just want to finish when we're talking about we spoke about the mikdash on Har Gerizim. Indeed, archaeology has proven vast excavations on Har Gerizim that there were two temples on Har Gerizim, one from the Persian period, which was destroyed in the days probably of Alexander the Great, and the second, which was built already in the Hellenistic period and destroyed by the Hasmonaim. So that is also verified archaeologically, even though the Samaritans Ad Hayom Hazeh deny the fact that there was a Mikdash. And okay, so there's 500,000 fragments and pieces of bones from Korbanos there, but there was no Mikdash. Never mind, there was an inscription that says over here that this guy was makriv in the Mikdash, but they still insist that there was no Mikdash. But anyway, those two stood over there, and at the same time, in Mitzrayim there's a Mikdash. Now Mitzrayim has a long history of Mikdashos L'Shem Shemayim, and there were probably at least three of them. One we mentioned the other time in Elfantini, that's not for today, also the end of the Persian period, and Chanyo goes and he's makriv. But from then on, the Kohen Gadol became a very sad story. The Kohen Gadol became a powerful position, and although we're talking way before the story of Hanukkah, because Alexander the Great is in the year 320, 330 BCE, and the story of Hanukkah will take place in the year 160, but from then on, the Kohen Gadol became very corrupt, and as the Gemara says by us, v'kol kach lama, I think it's a gersh in the Gra. No, it's a gift in the Bach, sorry. V'kol kach lama, v'shelach ma'os ha'bedomim. They used to buy it for money. And that was the Kohen Gadol. In the first place, Hamikdash, how was someone declared Kohen Gadol? So by Kohen Gadol me'echov. So the din is that there's Yerusha. If you have a Kohen Gadol, and his son is Mamalam Kamavos, if his son is fit to fill his father's shoes, so he's automatically appointed, Kohen Gadol. And it goes from father to son, if he's righteous enough to fill his father's shoes. But in the second place, Hamikdash, it became a power position for money. In other words, whoever offered the king money, he got the position. Whoever offered him more money. Now, where is the Kohen Gadol going to get this money from? Obviously, he's going to tax the people. He's not going to have his own money. It's going to come from the people. So in other words, it became a very corrupt position. And again, starting with Shimon HaTzadik, but as we see, there were a bunch of Kohen Gadol before, probably weren't Kohen Gadol for a long time either, so maybe the corruption began even before that. We know, for example, one of these Kohen Gadolim who was very corrupt was a Hellenistic Jew, a Hellenized Jew by the name of Menelaus, and he was there around the time of the story of Hanukkah. He was appointed by King Antiochus the fourth to be Kohen Gadol, and then the Jews got rid of him, and that's where the ensuing story of Hanukkah came on. The amount of money was a large sum of money. The Medrash tells us a story that once a Kohen Gadol died, and one Kohen wanted to be Kohen Gadol, and he sent his son with a basket made out of silver, full with silver, and he sends him to rush to the king, and you know, to give it to the king to be appointed. On the way, he bumps into his friend, the son of another Kohen, and this guy is running on the street, and he has a basket made out of gold, full with gold. So then he realized, you know, that he really didn't stand a chance. According to Josephus, the Gemara over here says that they used to die, they didn't live out the year. According to Josephus, it got to an extent later on that the king would just promote and demote Kohanim Gadolim at will. Anytime he needed money, he would just demote to Kohen Gadol and appoint a new Kohen Gadol. And in that possibility, we can have a few people who carry the name Kohen Gadol at the same time, even though only one of them serves, but could be the guy's ex-Kohen Gadol, he still carries the title Kohen Gadol. The two of them weren't together, very, very interesting views. Tell me that we have over here on the Mishnah, it says that the Mishnah says Shiva Sam Kariman Fishman. They so when we appoint another Kohen, just in case he's coming, we have another one ready. So Yishami says, do we put them to sleep in the same chamber in the Beis HaMikdash? Now if you have this other Kohen, so Yishami says if you do that, one is going to kill the other. In other words, he sees this guy ready to take his position, you know, it's a second of the freshness, he might even kill. That's what the Yerushalmi says. So there's no friendship between the thing. But what's interesting is that when you read Josephus, who talks about the history of the Churban of the Beis Hamikdash, you see he has four or five tiles of Kangdom for different people at the same time. And the only explanation is, again, the king promoted and demoted them. He has a whole story where Hanani Kohen Gadol was killed, and you have Rabbi Shmuel ben Pabi, who was Kohen Gadol at the time, and a bunch of others. Pinchas Ishabita, interesting story, was appointed Kohen Gadol. Very interesting stories over there in Josephus, and the only explanation is, as I said, that the Kohen Gadol was later demoted by the king, and a new one appointed, whoever paid him more money. There were, of course, Sadiqim. There's one Kohen who was mentioned in the Gemara in Bava Basra, Rabbi Shimon Gamla, who Chazal say, if not for him, Torah would have been forgotten from Klal Yisrael, because he realized that the current educational system was falling apart, and he felt something had to be done, and he made the takana to make chadarim, that kids should start being educated at a young age. Until then, people were educated from an older age. And so first of all, the chiyuv of educating Klal Yisrael in those days was on the kohanim in particular, and they were the leaders of Klal Yisrael. And Shimon Gamla was a kohen gadol, who Tosfos says in Bava Basra was a tzaddik gomer, even though he was appointed for money, but he was a tzaddik gomer. And Chazal says, if not for him, Torah would have been forgotten from Klal Yisrael. So you have the bright spots. Do we have any archaeological evidence from Kohanim Gedolim? Very few, but yes, in the Israel Museum there are a couple seals which carry the names of Yonatan Kohen Gadol, which many believe is Alexander Yanai. I'm just saying now there's a good chance that these seals cannot be authenticated because there have been a lot of forgeries recently. So it's true they're sitting there in the museum, but don't be surprised if one day they disappear from the shelves because of the scandal. But they're there. So that's one, Yochanan Kohen Gadol, that's a clay seal. The other things we have from a Kohen Gadol is a piece of pottery, a pottery shard found in Masada, and on it it says Hananya Kahana Rabba Akavya Bre. Hananya Kohen Gadol Akavya his son. And if we know that the people that got to Masada were there at the time of the Churban, we can assume that this is the same Hananya Kohen Gadol, which I mentioned earlier, who was killed by the Edomites when they raided Jerusalem, and his son escaped and made it to Masada. Another very interesting artifact that was found in the Old City is a place known today as the Burnt House, and that was a house that was destroyed by the Romans when the Beis Hamikdash was after the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. This was a very rich, elegant house, and was known in the Upper City, and that was the rich part of the town. And this was excavated after 1967, called the Burnt House. Remains of nice utensils, and it was a big, large size house, and in it there was a stone weight, and on it says the words the Bar Katros. So who is this Katros? So in the end, in the fourth Parakim Sachem, we have a list of four Kohanim Gedolim. One of them is Rabbi Shmuel ben Pabi, as we see over here, and one of them is Oyelim Beis Katros. Woe to me from the family of Katros. So the family of Katros is known to be Kohanim Gedolim, and the four Kohanim Gedolim that appear in that list over there are all from the end of the second Beis Hamikdash. And now we know that this Katros is indeed also, he fits into that pattern. They're all from the end of the days of the second Beis Hamikdash. Now, the Gemara says over here that the Kohen Gadol would not live out the year. What does that mean? What's commonly said is that the Kohen Gadol would actually die in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. If it was not worthy, to serve on Yom Kippur, when he'd walk into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he would die in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and that was it. That is what's commonly known. But the question is that indeed what the Gemara says or not? So here's the lashon that the Gemara says, Lo Hotzi Shnaso. The Gemara says he just didn't live out the year. It doesn't actually say that he died in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But let's see what we do have over here. In Daf Yutes, we have a story over here. The Gemara says that there was a big confrontation between the Purushim and the Tzedukim on certain issues in the Avodah of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. And one of the things is that the Kohen Gadol goes into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur with Ketores. And the issue between the Purushim and the Tzedukim was, where does he put the Ketores on the fire, on the coals? Does he do that inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and that was the opinion of the Purushim? Or does he do that outside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and when he walks in with the Ketores already on the fire? Now, so there was Dorish the Pasuk says, Ki ba'anan ayirah lakaporis, I shall be seen with an anan, with a cloud. In other words, when you come in, you should already have a cloud, you should already be, the Ketores should be on the fire. While the Purushim, Dorish the Pasuk says, V'nasanas ha-Ketores, ala eish lefnei Hashem. You should put the fire, the Ketores on the fire, lifnei Hashem, in the Kodesh HaKadosh. Now, since at the time when the Kohen Gadol walks into the Kodesh HaKadosh on the Kippur, no one's allowed to be there to supervise, because the Pasuk says, V'chol Adam le'yeh ba'olmor, there's no way of actually knowing whether or not he will obey or not. So therefore, they made him swear that he'll do, and that's what the Mishnah says in Yudches Amud Beis, Mashbir Mano Alecha Ben Mishishik and Shmur Babayis is that we make you swear Shalot Hashan Adover Mekom Hashem Anulcha, and you're not going to change anything from what we told you. Who Parash Shabocha, he cries and they cry because they suspect him of being a Tzedukit. So they made him swear, and indeed we know from Chazal, and we know from the Sifas also, that the Tzedukim, even though they were kind of Gedol for a while, but they followed the orders of the Pusha. So here we have a very interesting story. Tamar Rabbanan, you tell someone this. Ma'isim tzeduki achad she'it ken mivachutz v'echemes. A tzeduki was masakin mivachutz, meaning he put the ketores on the coals outside, and then he walked into the Kodesh HaKadoshim with the coals on the fire. V'yitziyasa yasamech tzimcha gedola. When he walked out, he was very happy. Why? Because he finally got to do what he felt was right. Paga ba'aviv, so his father bumped into him, amalo, he told him b'ni. Even though we are tzedukim, but we fear the Purushim and we respect them, and if they say not to do it, we don't do that. So the son said, all my life I felt bad for this. The Pasuk says, I'll be seen with a cloud, meaning he put the Torah on the fire outside. I said, when will I have the opportunity to fulfill this pasuk? Achshav shevol yodi lo kamenu. Now I have the opportunity. I should let it go. Amrim lo ho yom imuatim achemei svuto bashpa. A few days later, he died and he was lying in the, he was dumped in the garbage. V'yitolam yetzim yichotim. V'yeshomim, and some say b'tziyos anigat. And some say as he walked out, he was stricken by a malach. They heard a voice, they heard a noise. A malach slapped him in the face, and they found Regal Egel ben Ksefa. In other words, they found the image of the foot of a malach between his shoulders. In other words, he was killed right away. He was killed on the spot. So we learn this Gemara. It doesn't seem to tell us much difference that it happened a few days later or that it happened on the spot. But the Rishami says, very interesting. We have two other stories with Tzeduki, Kohan, and Gedolim. And one is the story in Masechah Sukkah. And the story in Masechah Sukkah is because the Tzedukim did not believe in Nisuch HaMayim, in pouring the water on the Mizbeach on Sukkot. In the Torah, it only says to pour water. It doesn't say to pour water. So we have a Lachom Mishum. We see that. We learn from various Tzedukim that Sukkot you pour water on the Mizbeach. But the Tzedukim did not believe in that. So the Mishnah Mem Ches and Sukkot says like this: V'manasecham la'gbeir yadcha, to the one who was actually pouring the water on his neck, to tell him lift up your hand. Why? Shabamach nisechecha legavei raglov. One time, a guy took the water and poured it on his foot, and that was a Kohen Gadol Tzeduki, ragmu kol esrogim, and the people over there were so upset, and they had their esrog in the hand because it was Sukkot, and they all pelted him with the esrog. And the Gemara doesn't tell us what happened afterwards, but he was not only, this is probably Yanai, he wasn't only Kohen Gadol, he was also king, and he punished the Jews severely, and the blood was flowing in the streets of Yerushalayim that day. So we have this story with the Kohen Gadol, and we have a third story in the Seftin Parah. The din is by a Parah, and we have this in our Gemara over here, Metamim Dat Beisam Alaf, Metamim Al Yerakon Asarif as a Parah. They made him Tamei, why? Lo Tzimilivu Shal Tzedokim Shayar Amrim, Bimarav Shemesh Hashem Haseh. So according to Tzedokim, the Kohen who did the Parah, he's got to be Harav Shemesh, he can't be a Tzvul Yom. And the Pushim held otherwise. And therefore, when the Kohen went to be Makriv, to do the paraduma, so they were metame. So the Tosefta and Parah tells us that in the days of Yochanan and Zakkai, there was a kohen who didn't want to become tame, and Yochanan and Zakkai realized that he did some trick, and he made him tame. So the Yerushalmi says like this. The Yerushalmi says like this. According to the Gersa Lohu Yomi Martim, according to the Gersa that this kohen gadol who was makdik Torah the wrong way, in a few days later he died. So then that was the same kohen gadol who a few days later, right after Yom Kippur, would come Sukkos. So he's the same kohen gadol who a few days later actually did the same shtick with the Nisa Hamayim. He didn't want to pour it on the mishbech. So the same kohen gadol who tried messing up the paraduma and messed up Yom Kippur and messed up Sukkos, it's all one person. But if you learn B'tzios HaMikdash that he was actually stricken on the way out, so then he can't be the same kohen gadol as the one in Sukkos, because he died right away. So then there's two different kohanim gadolim. One was in the case of Yom Kippur, and one was in the case of Sukkos. But anyway, these two gesaros over here are basically what we can say is the issue. Was the kohen gadol actually killed in the Kodesh HaKodeshim or not? You see that the two opinions over here in the Gemara, what happened? Now, we could say that this applies also to other kohanim gadolim also. The Gemara doesn't tell us. We do have a story later on. And later on, when the kohen gadol walks out from the Kodesh HaKodeshim, says Yatzo Vola Badech Beis Pnei Sasek. When he comes out of the Kodesh HaKadosh and after Makdik Gitoros, I'm reading Nun Beis Amud Beis Yoma. Umisparo Tfila Ktar Beis Achitzo. He davens a short tfila in the outer chamber. Velo Yamach B'tfila. So, and he didn't daven a long tfila. So Lahavet says Yisrael. He shouldn't scare Klal Yisrael. In other words, Klal Yisrael would be scared that if he didn't come out, they'd suspect that he died. So the people are waiting for him to come out, and if he's going to take his time with a long tfila, they're going to worry. Who knows what happened to him? So that the Mishnah says, and here the Gemara and Gimel on the base brings us into Sefta. Tana Abana Ma'aseh B'Kohen Gadol Echad She'ech B'Tfila Asah. A Kohen Gadol did a long tefila, B'Nimnu Echad B'Kohen B'Kohen Sachro. And the people wanted to go in, they thought that's it, he's dead already, we have to take him out. Hitchilu Hem Nichnasu V'Hu Yotzei. As they walk in, he walks out. Amulah, they told him, Neyma Harachta B'Tfila Asah. Why did you daven such a long tefila? Do you feel bad that I davened that the Beis HaMikdash shouldn't be destroyed? Amalek told him, "Alti rogel asus kim." Don't. It's not a good practice. Shereshaninu lo yamach b'tfilasik v'shol l'avos Yisrael. So we have a story of a kohen gadol who davened long tefillah and they suspected that he died. So this Gemara seems to imply that he actually did die in the Kodesh HaKodeshim. That this was, this was a common thing, and that's why they had to make a takana. Because if it wasn't a common thing, why would they have to worry about if the guy wants? So by the way, the Yerushalmi says, and Tosfos brings it here, Tosfos Yishanim, yes. That it was Shimon HaTzadik who was davening the long tefillah. So maybe he felt by him they don't have to worry about it. He was the one who was davening the long tefillah. And so anyway, from the Gemara here, it does seem that he died in the Kodesh HaKadosh. Now, the Velt says commonly that they used to tie a rope around the legs of the Kohen Gadol, so when he went in, if he died in the Kodesh HaKadosh, they were able to pull him out. Many have searched for the source of this, and again, in the Gemara it's not here, and as I said, there, in the Gemara itself, it's inconclusive to see did he actually die inside or not. We have writings in both directions, but the source for this is actually in the Zohar. In the Zohar, if I remember correctly, in Achei Mos, it does say that they put they tied ropes around the legs of the Kohen Gadol to pull him out in case he died. I want to talk a little about Mishkan Shiloh. And Mishkan Shiloh we know about very little. It's mentioned in Sefer Yoshua that when they brought the Orel Moed and they put it in Shiloh. And what's interesting is that Shiloh appears for numerous times. And the last time it appears, we have the story beginning of Sefer Shmuel, the famous story of Chana, which we read in the Torah, the first day of Rosh Hashanah. And after that, when they take the Oron and they leave Shiloh, so then Shiloh no longer appears on the map, and that's it. So we'll talk a little about Mishkan Shiloh. Now Mishkan Shiloh is mentioned in the same daf that we're talking about the Haftas today. So it goes a list. The first place of Mishkan was destroyed. The second, and the Gemara says, "Amar b'yechem b'tosef b'machol v'shiloh b'neishu b'shnei dvar gil arayis b'zayin kachim." Shiloh was destroyed because it was gil arayis b'zayin kachim. So what do we know about the destruction of Shiloh? So as I said, it doesn't mention in Sefer Shmuel that Shiloh was destroyed. Shiloh basically disappears from the map. Where was Shiloh? So in the end, it says for Shoftim, it gives explicit directions. Hinechag Hashem b'Shiloh miyomim yomima Hashem mitzvano lebeis ha'el north of beis ha'el mizrach Hashem shlam asila holim beis ha'el shchem al minagav levon, east of the road that goes from beis ha'el to shchem and south of levon. And that was pretty explicit details of how to get to Shiloh. We don't find any other explicit directions like this in anywhere else in Tanakh. So Shiloh is an obvious place. If you travel today, may not be recommended for safety wise, but if you travel today from Beit El to Shechem, so Shiloh is indeed, well, now they diverted the road, but originally the road went through Levona, and basically it's telling you that if you reach Levona, then you already passed the turn off to Shiloh, because Shiloh is Menegev Levona. Where is Shiloh? So in Sefer Tehillim it says, "Vayimas bo Yosef v'shevet Ephraim lebachar." It says that Shiloh is in the territory of Ephraim. On the other hand, the Gemara in Zvachim in the last parak says that wherever there was Shechina in Klal Yisrael, so the Shechina was only in the territory of Binyamin. So the Gemara asked the question. What about Mishkan Shiloh? It says, "Vayimas bo Yosef v'shevet Ephraim lebachar." So the Gemara answers, "With Tzua Nafka, there was a little territory that went out from Binyamin into Ephraim, and that territory belonged to Binyamin, and that's where Mishkan Shiloh was." Today, Shiloh has been positively identified. The first one to mention it actually is the Kaftar of Farach in the 14th century. He got to a place called Seimon, which carries the name Shiloh, and he identified a place which is known as the Dome of the Shechina, and he identified that as Shiloh. Today, there's even a modern settlement called Shiloh. Where is the place of the Mishkan in Shiloh? Now, Shiloh, yes, as we said, the Chorban of Shiloh, the Gemara says in the end of Zvachim that Shiloh stood for 369 years. How do we know this? Well, it doesn't say this anywhere, but we just calculate that if there's 480 years from Yetzias Mitzrayim until the Beis HaMikdash is built, and 40 years of those go for the Mishkan, and you have 57 for Nov and Givon, so you're left with the 369 years. That's what the Gemara makes a calculation, but it doesn't really tell us when Shiloh was destroyed. There are two references to the destruction of Shiloh, one in Tehillim, which I quoted to you before. Another is a reference that appears in Sefer Yirmiyahu twice, and one of them, for example, in Perek Zayin, Pasuk Yud-Beis, "Kilechuna al-Mekomeh asher b'Shiloh sheshikabdish misham b'Yishona runa asher asisilo meras am-Yisrael." Yirmiyahu is giving the word that the Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed. But the people fail to believe and take him seriously. Well, is it possible that Hashem will let his house be destroyed? So Yirmiyahu says, you know, you don't believe it? Go to my place in Shiloh and take a look and see what happens over there, and then you'll know. And later on, indeed, in Perek Chavav, if I remember correctly, Yirmiyahu is almost killed by the people who don't like his nevuah. And the big tiny thing is, why did you say Kishilo Yiyah Habayisazah? Why did you say Kishilo Yiyah Habayisazah? Yes, Yirmiyahu Chavav, Pasuk Tes. Mado Ani Beis Hashem Hashem Lema Kishilo Yiyah Habayisazah. In other words, this nevuah of Shiloh is still deep in their minds. They know it. The Churban of Shiloh was a big tragedy. Now, Shiloh was, the Gemara says in the end, of the last parak in Zvachim, in the last parak in Zvachim, the Gemara says that Shiloh was actually, the building itself was built from stone walls, unlike the Mishkan, which was made from Kerushim, but the roof was not a permanent roof, it was Urias. It was just tapestries, just like the Mishkan. And that could be interesting, because when they want to build the Beis HaMikdash, they call it Beis HaRazim. They call it a house of cedars. Where the HaRazim? The HaRazim on the roof. So in other words, to build a new... So Hashem says, did I command anyone, Lama lo b'nishan li beis ha-razim? Why have you not built me a house with cedar? In other words, a house building of stone we had already. That's not new. But to build one with cedars on the roof, that hadn't been yet. Because Shiloh was built from stone, but the roof was not a permanent roof. So in other words, Shiloh was a period which lasted for a long time, 369 years, but at the same time it was known that this is not going to be the final resting place of the Shechina, and that's why they didn't make a permanent roof. Indeed, archaeological evidence from the whole area around Shiloh from the days of the Shoftim is clear. The largest concentration of Israelite settlement in Eretz Yisrael is around Shiva. The archaeological evidence is clear. And this is done none other than the famous Professor Finkelstein, who today is the biggest kofer in the whole Tanakh, but he's the one who did the research over there in his early book from the mid-80s. It fits, you know, Sefer Shoftim beautifully. In the mid-90s, he already changed his tune. But in the original, so the excavations show clearly that the area around Shiloh was the heaviest concentration of Israelite settlement. Yehuda at the time was secondary, much less than that area over there. So Shiloh is there, and it stands for 369 years. And contrary to what we look, when we look at Sefer Shoftim, we see battles. The whole time there's war and war and war. But if you analyze it properly, it's just the opposite. Those are small skirmishes at the edges, but no one actually reaches Shiloh. They reach the Yericho, they reach Emek Israel, but Shiloh itself remains protected. And what the Shkot Haaretz HaBarim Shana, the land rests for 40 years, the land rests for 80 years, so you don't really see, most of the time is a peaceful time. The Pasuk says, Ki Lavosa Madarta La Menucha Vela Nachlo. Moshe Rabbeinu says, here in the Midbar you have not reached the Menucha and the Nachlo. And Chazal says, Menucha is Shiloh, and Nachlo is Yerushalayim. In other words, you have not reached a calm period where you can build a Beis HaMikdash, and one is referring to Shiloh and one is referring to Yerushalayim. I mean, you don't build a Beis HaMikdash when the security situation is bad, because you build it, it's going to be destroyed tomorrow. You only build it when Rishavtem Betach, as the Pasuk says, when the situation is secure, then you can build the Beis HaMikdash. And so Shiloh was built, and it stood for 369 years. That's probably a secure period in time, not a time of war. Until then, for 14 years, when Bnei Israel came into Canaan, it was actually a time of war. This could explain, and this, by the way, goes and takes us back to Masech HaShkolim. And Masech HaShkolim, we have a very interesting machlokas. This also has to do with Parashat Shlach, which was either last week or next week, depends where you are. We know that when, in the end, in Sefer Shmuel, it tells a story that they went to war and they took the Aron. And the Plishtim at first, when they hear the idea that the Aron is coming, they are terrified. But later they go to war and they are victorious and they capture the Aron. And we have Machlokas, and this is brought in the Yerushalmi and Shkolim. We have Machlokas, was this special or not? So one of the Amma says that there were two Aronos, one which carried the Sefer Torah, one which carried the Luchos, and normally when Klal Yisrael went to war, they carried one of them, but this time when they went to war, they carried the other one. While Chacham say no, there was only one Aron, and it only went out to war once. And that was the time in days of Eli when it was taken by the Plishtim. Now this Yerushalmi, which is actually a Tosefta, needs a little explanation. If we look in Parsha Shlach, we see the Pasuk says clearly, V'arom b'rith Hashem u'moshe lo moshe m'kerev ha-machmet. When they went to war, the Mapilim climbed the mountain, so the Aron didn't go. Mashma that every other time, the Aron did go to war. And we have other evidence by Yeshua that the Aron went to war. But it could be the answer is like this, is that really, there's different time periods. When Klal Yisrael are at war, capturing Eretz Canaan, then the Aron goes to war. But once already they settle the Aron in Shiloh, it's not going to go and be taken out for war. It's going to remain there. And likewise in Yerushalayim. It's inconceivable that when the Aron was in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, every time they went to war, they took it out and went to war. But there's plenty of riots for that. So now the Aron is sitting in Shiloh. And once it was in Shiloh, it remained in Shiloh, according to Chazal. It didn't go out to war. Before that, it went out to war for 14 years. They didn't have a permanent base. They were hopping from one place to the other. But once they were in Shiloh, the Aron stayed there for 369 years. Except that this one time it went out to war. Why did it go out to war this one time? Because this one time was actually a battle for Shiloh itself. And they knew that if they're going to lose this battle, then the Shiloh is going to be destroyed. So they have nothing to lose by taking the Aron out to war. And indeed, if you look at the maps, it's a little hard to explain, but if you look at the maps, indeed, from Afek, Nachal Shiloh leads straight up all into Shiloh. In other words, it was a battle, not for just Afek, which is Nevar Sha'ayim, but it was a battle for capturing Shiloh. And Chazal tell us that when Eli died, Chorva Shiloh. When Eli died, Shiloh was Chor. So we know that this is, we know that, that was the end of Shiloh, despite the fact that in Sefer Shmuel it doesn't mention it, but later on the Mishkan will be in Nof. So it doesn't mention explicitly that Shiloh is Chorev, and it's a good question why, and I don't have a satisfactory answer, but the Chazal tells us that that's what it, when it happened. What day of the year was Shiloh Chorev? So, in the list of Tanis Tzadikim, in Hilchos Tainis, it's brought from the market that it was on Yud Iyar. and your ear shila was chayav. But there's a small problem with that, and we're not going to solve this problem either, but there's a small problem with that. We know the Aron stood in state listing for 7 months, and then when they brought it back to Beit Shemesh, then it was a time of Ktzir Chitim. So in other words, then it was Iyar. So 7 months backwards, you're not in the month of Iyar, you're in the middle of the winter. Of course, we don't know. This question is already, I saw Rav Tzvi Cohen in a Sefer, quote someone who asked the question. We don't have an answer. I don't have an answer. The only possibility is that it says that the Oren went from Ebenezer to Ashdod, and from Ashdod it went to Gas, and from there it went to Ekron. It could be that this, and from there it waited 7 months, and then it went to Beit Shemesh. It could be that the process of taking it to Ashdod, to Gas, to Ekron, also took a good 5 months, and like this, it actually came out to a total of 12 months. So that's, but to sum it up, is that the Mishkan Shiloh actually was a peaceful time for Klal Yisrael as a whole, and it lasted for close to 370 years. Chazal call it Menucha. And an interesting thing is that when looking for the site of Shiloh, so far the site of the Mishkan, so far it hasn't been found. But unfortunately, I don't have a good picture to show you. But there's a place north of the ancient village of Shiloh today, where there's an area cut in the rock. And the width of the area cut out fits for 50 amos, almost. And the axis is a clear east-west axis. And one of the suggestions, which was already made by the American scholar Robinson, was that the Mishkan stood there. In other words, the Mishkan wasn't actually in Shiloh itself, but was outside of Shiloh. And that would explain why there was a special din in Shiloh that you ate karbonos not only in the city, but anywhere where you can see it. While in Yerushalayim, you could only eat karbonos in the city. Because in Yerushalayim, that the Beis Hamikdash was in the city, if you took it out of the wall, it's Yotze. But in Shiloh, the Mishkan itself was outside, so you're not taking it outside, so therefore you can eat it b'chol haroah. But that's, again, that's a long stretch of time. It's not for now. But to date, there's an archaeological, there was no dig over there. There was an experimental dig. They didn't find pottery from the times of what they're looking for. They found pottery from later periods. But again, as I said, it wasn't a thorough excavation, so it's very hard to determine, you know. But so far, very hard to determine. But they believe the place of the Mishkan. Indeed, if you go to Shiloh today, they'll show you the place of the Mishkan north of the city of Shiloh. Okay.